We're on 1,000 planets and spreading out.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
To the Batmobile.
May the force be with you.
Who is that masked man?
Avengers, assemble.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Fantastic Forum. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell, and we're here to excite, entertain, elucidate, and educate you with news, information, and discussion about your favorite geeks. This is Fantastic Forum. Time to get your geek on! All right, well, first, some genre-related news before the start of today's discussion. More news coming out of the Television Critics Association Summer Press Tour. Arrow executive producer Mark Guggenheim announced that the upcoming CW crossover Crisis on Infinite Earths will be co-written by Marv Wolfman. Of course, Wolfman is the author of the original comics miniseries that thrilled readers and consolidated the DC Comics universe way back in 1985. The CW's Crisis crossover occurs between Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and Batwoman. The epic five-night event begins with Supergirl on Sunday, December 8th. The crossover will also include Black Lightning, who will be interacting for the first time with the CW's other DC characters. And longtime voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy, will also make a special appearance. Andy Serkis will direct Venom 2. The motion capture actor gained fame performing such roles as Gollum and King Kong, but he is no stranger to the helm of a film, having previously directed Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle, and Breathe in 2017. Serkis has also had more conventional acting roles, among them Black Panther villain Claw in several Marvel movies. Although there aren't many details available, it is known that Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams are reprising their roles, and the sequel will also include the symbiote villain Carnage. Venom 2 is currently slated for release in October 2020. Season 2 of Titans premieres on streaming service DC Universe on September 6th. You can check out a trailer on the Fantastic Forum Facebook page at facebook.com/Fantastic Forum. And while you're there, if you haven't already, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We love to be liked and we like to be followed. Sad news this week as comic artist and editor Ernie Colon passed away on August 8th. He was the co-creator of Amethyst, Arrak, Son of Thunder, and Damage Control. He was perhaps best known for his work on the graphic novel adaptation of the 9/11 Commission Report. Colon also illustrated graphic biographies of Anne Frank and Che Guevara, children's books, and horror comics. And he worked on numerous books for DC, Marvel, Harvey, Gold Key, Valiant, and Atlas Seaboard Comics over a career that spanned over 57 years. Ernie Colon was 88. So, today, I am joined by a fantastic panel of experts, and we're going to be talking about some of these items and more. So, I'm going to introduce my guest panel. We have joining us via the miracle of Skype, the ever wonderful Shireen Nicole. And hi, Shireen. Yeah, we also have somebody who hasn't been on the show for a minute, and I am just delighted to have him. And that is Brian Lyles, and we also have the illustrious Emily Witten. So, everybody, welcome to the show. Hello. And now, first, I wanted to sort of backtrack just a little because, you know, we've got this CW crossover event that's happening in the fall, And I'm a little curious about what you guys think about some of this stuff, because of course it looks as if Black Lightning is going to be joining this whole thing, and you know, I think that's wonderful. But also, it's being co-written by Marv Wolfman, who is the writer of the original Crisis on Infinite Earths series. So, Shireen, what do you think?
Well, I have one question, and it is Salim Akil still involved with Black Panther? I mean, Black Panther, Black Lightning?
You know, I believe that he is. I mean, I want to say that he's the showrunner there. Why do you ask?
Well, there's been some really bad controversy with Salim Akil that it caused his own show to get canceled, and some kind of predatory sexual behavior.
Ooh.
Ew.
I did not know that.
Good heavens.
Ugh. Yeah, don't know. It's allegations, so there are allegations. So
smoke, there's fire, Shireen, a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's caused some shakeup. So I wasn't sure about that. As far as it's great that Black Lightning is finally in the CW universe. It was weird. I don't call it the Arrowverse verse because Arrow is just Green Batman. But anyway, I think it's really great because Black Lightning should have been in this family in the first place. So I'm really glad to hear that, and great that Marv Wolfram is writing it, because now we can get it straight from the source.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hear you. Brian,
oh.
What do you think?
It's one of the things I've been waiting for, especially this upcoming fall season. I mean, that, you know, Flash ending, you know, where the newspaper time date changed.
Hold up.
Oh, you haven't caught up?
Spoiler alert?
I think I got two episodes of The Flash.
Oh, okay.
I got like two of The Flash.
Never
and, you know.
Spoiler
alert. Well, no, it's okay. I mean, I get, you know, it serves me right.
Yeah.
I mean, just don't kill me with whatever you're going to say.
But, I mean, the whole... One, let's put it this way. I'm glad they're introducing new characters, especially, you know, Batwoman and Black Lightning. And I believe this is like the ending of Arrow's run, I believe, mm-hmm. at the end of Crisis, because his season's it's going to be a very short season.
Yes, so, I think it definitely truncated. I think it's like 8 episodes,
yeah,
or something like that.
So... I mean, it'll be interesting. You know, even though majority of us are kind of familiar with what happens, you know, based off of the book part of it, but I'm kind of curious of how they do it in the TV series.
Mm, yeah, right. Based on what they already have, and now having Marv Wolfman, mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Emily, what do you think?
Well, I confess, I'm not going to get mad about spoilers. I'm way behind on all the DC shows, which is, I'm ashamed. But, you know, not too ashamed. I have other stuff, too.
Yeah, you got that nice little, you know, hamster book.
I know. I got a comic, and I'm maybe going to be working on something else soon. Anyway, so the thing is, though, I sat down and watched the last crossover, even though I was way behind. And it was still really fun, and I still, like, got what was going on. And, of course, you know, I knew, like, some of the stuff that was going on going into it, because I wasn't totally behind. Mm-hmm. But I'm really looking forward to this one. I think Marv Wolfman is delightful, and I'm glad that he's involved, since he was, you know, the person writing it originally. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And I'm looking forward to seeing what guest stars show up. I've heard different rumors of, like, you know, the various, I don't know if Tom Welling is going to appear. That one kind of got floated back and forth, if I'm recalling correctly.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing who shows up, and also, yeah, I think it's going to be a fun story. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch it, even though I'm way behind. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and with the crossovers, it doesn't seem to matter whether
exactly.
or not you're caught up.
That's
I mean, these
point,
are
yeah.
like sort of independent, freestanding stories.
It's like mini movies.
Yeah.
And of course, the thing with it was more logistical, Shireen, with Black Lightning, because Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow, you know, these shows shoot up in Vancouver, north of the border. And Black Lightning is shot in Atlanta. And so
I think that was a convenient excuse, but really,
well,
didn't make any difference from them being in the same universe.
Well, I can tell you from personal
experience.
I'm in
the same universe as my friend Sam, and she's in Toronto.
Yeah, but when you have these different production crews and the various talent and the various production schedules for all these shows, it makes a big difference if everybody is on the same lot versus somebody who isn't.
Yeah, but they rarely do crossovers unless it's a big crossover event. So I don't really feel like that affects it at all. I think they just...
Well, it does affect it.
Made a strange... No, not really. They, like I said, they rarely... I watch them.
Fight, fight, fight.
Do these things. So they only do them when they're big crossover events, so it wouldn't have affected the filming at all, but,
Well, I think that also you have to keep in mind that, you know, Black Lightning is going on, what, its third year. So the first 2 years, you kind of want to try to build it on its own. And at least, you know, try to, I can understand trying to be separate. I think now is the time I feel is like, hey, let's bring it in here. Because I think that one, we're losing one, we need to get another, gain another. So
yeah, I think that that's more true. They didn't trust whether or not the Akils were going to be able to deliver in that universe because they're not a part of the comic book family. I think that's more accurate as to why they didn't do it.
You know, there is still being able to shoot all of these shows and get them delivered on time. And when you've got, I mean, we're not talking about across town here. We're talking about Vancouver versus the Deep South. I mean, that is no small thing, especially if you're talking about moving the talent and some production people from Atlanta to Vancouver, you know, to be able to do this thing and then get them back and shoot the regular episodes that they were shooting. I mean, because, and also bear in mind, Shireen, that Black Lightning, unlike these other shows, Black Lightning is not a leg of this crossover. So, you know, where they have worked into the production schedule, oh yeah, a total episode of The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and Supergirl, you know, are going to be parts of this crossover, they got a whole different production schedule for Black Lightning.
Well, and I do remember reading about the organized chaos of shooting the last crossover. Like, I remember just reading some article about the scheduling that had to be involved, and so it's a legitimate reason. But I'm glad that it's going to be in this one, and I think it's good to have the whole family involved.
I'll tell you something else. Oh, but first, you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM, Radio Arlington. We are your community radio station. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Shireen Nicole and by Brian Lyles and by Emily S. Witten. We are currently talking about the upcoming crossover on the CW involving the various DC Comics characters. And one thing that I think, Shireen, you and I had spoken off-air about this, but I'm going to share this with our listening audience because there's some information that came my way just recently, and I don't think I mentioned this on last week's show. I'm trying to remember when I first heard it, but this goes directly to productions and how producers and showrunners and studios behave in terms of trying to save a buck. And I can tell you from having worked on a number of different productions as a union talent, there are certain things that you are supposed to get. For example, if you work at night, you're supposed to get a bump for that. If you work in the rain, you're supposed to get a bump for that. If you work in smoke, you're supposed to get a bump for that. And frequently there are productions that are trying to be kind of thrifty and they're like, oh, well, you know, you weren't indoors with the smoke on a soundstage. You were outside, and so the smoke was in the air, and we don't feel like we should have to give you a bump for that. And anyway, though, but this goes to this is something I heard about the Walking Dead production, and so you know, I mean, now of course, the Walking Dead television show is one of the biggest shows on AMC. And, of course, you've got The character of Carl Grimes, who was killed off on the series, played by Chandler Riggs. So, now Chandler Riggs had been, of course, and Carl, the character, is like the main character on The Walking Dead. Chandler Riggs was a minor. Now, apparently, as I have come to understand it, as Chandler was nearing the age of 18, he was looking to sign an adult contract. And the producers were not interested in paying him adult contract money. And so despite the importance of Carl to The Walking Dead, Chandler Riggs was killed off the show. And so that to me is something of a cautionary tale in terms of the way that Hollywood deals with contracts and talent and money. And they are looking even on a show like The Walking Dead, where one would imagine that they could have paid this young man what he was asking for. So I found that very instructive.
Eliminated that rookie contract. That's
all he did. Yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, so anybody got anything else to say about the CW and this thing?
My main thing is I don't know. If I remember having a mild conversation with Shireen about Supergirl. A couple weeks, like maybe a month ago, and I know she was kind of like iffy about finishing or watching the season because it did start off slow and then kind of really kicked in the last, like, I would say 2 months. And now leading into the new season for Supergirl, I feel like, okay, this is going to be interesting now that there is a quote-unquote female Superman and a female Lex Luthor. You know, now Lana's taken over as, you know, the main Luthor part. So I mean, I'm anticipating that, of course, the Flash, and I'm kind of curious where they'll take the Black Lightning family going into the new season because, you know, there are some major changes in that show. So it'll be interesting. So,
Well, the one other thing that I would like to mention is, in addition to Black Lightning, I think it's really cool that they have found something for longtime voice actor Kevin Conroy to do. And I believe that he is going to be Bruce Wayne, you know, in the Batwoman series.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
you
like
know,
it.
So, you know, because of course we've become accustomed to hearing this man's voice. And I've always thought it was a shame that the people whose voices, you know, you don't necessarily know their faces. And, you know, for example, I thought it would have been really wonderful if before some of these people died, because, you know, we died basically. I mean, if you knew Kenny Baker, you know, playing R2-D2 in Star Wars. Yeah, I mean, you know, and the fans had seen him and, you know, various conventions and whatnot. But I thought it would have been nice if they'd have given Kenny Baker some role where he could have shown his face. You know, ditto with you know, and now I can't believe I'm David Prowse. Yeah, you know, David Prowse, like, you know, David Prowse. You know, I mean, some of these people who were so integral to the, and heck, you could even give James Earl Jones some kind of walk-on thing, you know, for what he does. But I've always thought it was a shame that there's some performers who are known solely by either their physique or their voices or some other element of whatever performance it is that they are delivering, except their faces, which, of course, is very important.
Or if they're known for action and suddenly you get humor, I would like to shout out The Rock in Jumanji. I love that movie. It's so goofy. I can't wait for the next one. It's going to be even goofier.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, okay, so moving right along, I did want to find out if anybody has anything to say about the premiere of Titans season 2. I don't know. I personally big fan of the DC Universe streaming service, and I have and in fact a bunch of those streaming services now. I mean, I finally watched episode 1 of The Boys on Amazon Prime.
That one's on my list. Okay. It looks interesting.
Yeah. Well, I liked Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson in terms of what they did with the comic. You know, actually, Shireen had some very interesting and insightful comments about the boys and the failures of the adaptation to seize upon the key elements of the comic book. And Shireen, I'm going to have to ask you, because after we did the show last week, somebody, and I can't remember who it was, who I think it might have been Drew. Somebody, no, it was Mike. Mike Lunsford, and you know, Mike didn't understand the point that you made, so we're gonna have to.
Well, he does now. He watched it, and he's like, "Okay, now I totally see what you meant."
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he totally gets what I was talking about. He texted me to tell me. but what I find interesting, especially in speaking about Kevin Conroy, is that this choice of Batman for Titans season 2 is bizarre to me. And I'm not a person that like has to cling to one single image of a character, but the gentleman that they've chosen for Batman, I cannot think of his name, but he's Sejora from
Exactly.
And I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I don't get it at all. So I don't know, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Ian Glenn is his name. Yeah. That's very interesting. You know, he would not have been my first choice.
Oh, right. That guy. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, right? Yes, like, yes. Sir Jorah like Mormont.
In your brain going, what, Emily?
I mean, I'm open to the idea that he could be a good Batman. I don't know, I guess. But
he's got a cool voice.
He has a really good deep voice
and a craggy look. You know,
I mean, that's true. He's a little too craggy in my view.
Kind of old.
It's like he's a little, especially for this Robin, right? If it was him against Tim, then it might make sense. But a guy that age against Dick. Okay, that didn't sound right.
It's a family show, you know?
Yeah, sorry. But, you know, this Bruce Wayne with this Dick Grayson, the age gap doesn't make a lot of sense. It would have worked better with Tim Drake. But it just doesn't make sense to me, the physicality of it. He's a great actor, listen. But I'm not one of those people that say actors can play any role. No, that's
no, they
stupid.
Can't.
That's why they have
that's
casting
right.
directors.
That's exactly
so
right.
You know, I don't see it, but I really would love to, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but Emily was saying what she thought about it.
Well, actually, before we jump to that, I just have to say as an aside, because I've always thought it was a little... Hey, at one time, you know, because words and names and stuff didn't always mean what they have come to mean from a contemporary point of view. And I've always thought it was very sad. Dick Grayson, all right. And but hey, I was in high school with a guy named Richard Holder. This is a true story. We called him Rich.
No.
We called him Rich. As you can imagine. So anyway, on that cheery note, I'm sorry, Emily, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just saying, he's a really good actor, and he does have an imposing voice when he wants to, and I think that it's possible that, you know, we're all going to be like, oh, actually, that's a really good choice, but I do think the age... is maybe a little bit much, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I figure if they cast him in a show that's in its second season and doing at least reasonably well, I think it's doing pretty well, or at least, you know, they're making another season of it. Like, they wouldn't cast him if he was completely wrong for it. Cross your fingers. I'm always optimistic. I know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about season two. I mean, Titans, this was the, if I'm not mistaken, this was the first, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could really say Young Justice was like the first.
No. Titans was first.
Oh, okay.
Well, say live action, first.
Yeah, you know. But and I liked what they did with it. I mean, Anna Diop as Starfire. I know the haters were out in force, and you know, but I didn't have a problem with that. I liked when they brought on Wonder Girl, and I mean, I liked Hawk and Dove, and I liked what I mean. Now, the one thing that I thought it was kind of edgy, the stuff that they were doing, and the FCC is going to prevent me from quoting Dick Grayson, you know, in terms of his comment about Batman, basically, F Batman, you know. But
you know, overall, when I saw it, I mean, the thing I had the biggest problem with was that Garfield Logan could only turn into a green tiger, apparently. And I'm like, yeah. Well, you know, we should have the whole pantheon of green animals, but not just that. And I'm very curious to see how they resolve this whole Trigon storyline, you know, because that was one of my favorites from the run of Mark Wolfman and George Perez on the original New Teen Titans. I really liked that. I really liked Brother Blood. I really liked the Judas Contract. But yeah, that Trigon thing, I mean, they were hinting and building on that from issue number one. In fact, that was like the whole reason the New Teen Titans were assembled. So I'm excited about season two, and I will be tuning in. And from the trailer, which you can see on the Fantastic Forum Facebook page at facebook.com/Fantastic Forum, it looks really good. And you know, you've got all these characters that you know and that you love, and they're wearing costumes, and looks like Dick even becomes Nightwing in this season. So I'm excited.
They've been building
and
up to that all along. The way that his Robin persona has devolved, I mean, not devolved, but dissolved, and the way he's been building into becoming Nightwing. They've done that actually quite well.
But speaking of Titans, have we talked about Doom Patrol in detail on this radio show before?
We haven't, but you know, Doom Patrol deserves its own episode.
It does!
Episode,
I will be on that episode, and if I'm not, I will write angry letters to you, Yuli. Doom Patrol is my favorite show on TV right now outside of The Good Place. The Good Place and Doom Patrol are the two. Oh, and oh gosh, it's got such a long name, Rookie Historian Gu Hae-rung, which is an excellent Korean historical drama that's going on right now. But yeah, Doom Patrol is so good, and they're going to have another season, and I'm super excited, and Alan Tudyk is the weirdest villain, and and all the characters are misfits, and they're wonderful, and all the actors and actresses are great, and Crazy Jane is amazing, and we should have a whole show about this, Yuli.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, you know, the fact that this is, I mean, it's not totally far afield, because we were talking about DC Universe.
Well, my understanding is they showed up on Titans. I didn't watch all the Titans show.
Yeah, they did.
But that's what made me think of it, is that they were on Titans at one point. But yeah, Doom Patrol is just such a clever and creative show. I mean, obviously the source material as well, but the show managed to every episode surprise me. And in good ways, and or weird ways, or there are Nazi puppets. Anyway, like, there's just all kinds of odd, interesting stuff going on, and then, you know, there's character development and growth and humor and like a lot of weirdness. And I keep saying things are weird, but there's a giant cockroach.
Yeah, but they're weird.
Mean, they're weird. Yeah,
you've got the living street.
Yeah, Danny the Street. So you've got this weird show, and then I will say, if you're feeling kind of blue, here's my trifecta. Go watch Doom Patrol. It's a weird, fun, interesting, bizarre show. Watch The Good Place. It's got some interesting takes on morality and ethics, all wrapped up in hilarious humor and also some weirdness. And then watch what I mentioned before, the Rookie Historian Gu Hae-rung, which is an adorable historical romance drama comedy mishmash of, there's court politics, all kinds of stuff. Tom and I are watching it now, and we are addicted. So, you know, if you're feeling like you need something, and none of them will depress you, I don't think. Doom Patrol will mess with your mind, but none of them will depress you. That's the thing.
All right, there you have it. Essentially unsolicited testimonial for for Doom Patrol. No, it's okay. It's okay.
It's on topic.
Yeah, no, hey, you know, all right. Well, we are we're getting ready to be on our way out here, but I did, yeah,
not fully.
Absolutely. Well, no, that's true. I mean, just taking a quick break, but I want to throw this in before we go, because I don't think we're going to spend a lot of time on this, and I did want to just mention, do a little homage to Ernie Colon when we get back. But Andy Serkis directing this Venom 2 thing. I'm fascinated by that, and particularly since, you know, Venom is mostly computer generated, and I understand that's part of the reason that Andy Serkis was selected to direct this particular project. I finally saw Venom on cable not long ago.
Did you like it?
It was okay.
I still haven't seen it.
Really? It was okay.
I mean, the trailer didn't even move me.
Yeah, it's 2 hours. You feel like, oh, I got nothing to do. That's how I felt. Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting, Andy Serkis, with all of his experience in that, you know, being, you know, being in charge of the whole outlook of the thing. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I mean, stuff like this, it's like that Halle Berry Catwoman. It's like, how do you do Catwoman? Well, in the sense that, how do you do Catwoman without, you know, your protagonist, Batman? And it's similar, you know, how do you do Venom without Spider-Man? But hey, but they did it, and it didn't totally suck. You know? Anyway.
Catwoman did.
Yes, that did. That's true. That did. I have yet to see that, but that's a whole other thing.
I have.
Anyway, look, you know, time for me to remind everybody that WERA is a community radio station. We're non-commercial, and we rely on the ongoing generosity of our underwriters, our sponsors, and listeners like you for the totality of the operation of the radio station. Visit the website at WERA.FM to find out how you can support community radio and how you can be a part of it, because, of course, community radio means of the community, for the community, by the community. So, look, we're going to step aside momentarily to acknowledge the invaluable contribution of our underwriters. We're also going to take the opportunity to promote several of the shows coming up later this evening on WERA. But stick around, because we'll be back with more Fantastic Forum right after this. And we're back here on the Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM, Radio Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Shireen Nicole and by, who are you again, Psych? Brian Lyles and Emily S. Witten. And
it's
a mysterious stranger.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say it was a senior moment, but not really. All right, so look, great comic talent was lost this week. Ernie Colon, and I had the opportunity to meet him at a convention. I think it was like New York Comic Con where I met him. But you know, anytime you know, because he was American, he's born in Puerto Rico, and that was why I didn't stress that, because, you know, you say the Puerto Rican born artist, but then people are like, oh, he was American. Puerto Ricans are American. But, you know, he had a really distinguished career. And, I mean, I had known about the 9/11 commission report that he had illustrated. Didn't realize that he had done Anne Frank and the Che Guevara biography. He was a heck of a talent, in addition to the fact that he did some creations for Atlas Seaboard Comics, co-created Damage Control, which you know, is a very novel sort of concept for Marvel, creator of Amethyst, you know, which a lot of people really like, and so that was just a shame, you know. So you know, if anybody has anything they would like to add about Ernie Colon, now is the moment.
I mean, I think you summed it up. Yeah. So, I mean, it's very sad that he's gone, and he had certainly quite an impact. But I don't know that I have anything else to add.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Damage Control was cool.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, I in fact, I had even cracked, you know, a couple of those Princess of Gym World Amethyst things, you know, and everybody'd heard of Amethyst, you know. One of the things that fascinated me was, you know, that he had done some stuff for Valiant. Dr. Solar, Man of the Atom, you know, which was revived down the road. And then I was also a big fan of Atlas Seaboard Comics. In fact, Tiger Man, you know, was a character that I liked, and he had drawn that too. So, you know, anyway.
I'm not familiar with that one. Was it a tiger who was a man?
Yes.
I was just guessing there. You gotta love comics sometimes for that. It's like, what were his powers? Well, he was a tiger who was a man.
Well, and that's one of the things. There was a crossover that was between Invincible and Spider-Man. You know, Robert Kirkman's Invincible. Mm. And, yep. You know, some kind of way Invincible came into the Marvel Universe. And he was... he was deriding Spider-Man and the other Marvel characters for not having particularly imaginative names. Mm-hmm. And he was like, dude, you should totally be like the Arachnid or something like that, you know? And he saw the Avengers. He's like, okay, wait a minute. Let me get it. He's looking at Iron Man, Robot Man, right? Captain America's like Flag Man, right? You know, this kind of thing. So I totally get it, you know?
Well, I do like when the in-universe explanation for some of those names is that people on the street just start calling them that, mm-hmm. like what they did with the Mysterio and the right. Spider-Man Far From Home and stuff. And it's like, well, that can explain away a lot of kind of weird, stupid names mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. easy names, yeah. you know.
And going back to the DC TV shows, like The Flash, every time, you know, you hear, you know, a Flash gets a new villain, it's just like, Weather Guy. That's, you know, they'll think of some crazy name. And so they'll just say, I'll work on it. So,
yeah. Well, although by the same token, Superman is kind of lucky because mm-hmm. he could very well be the bird, you know?
And I always thought... Flying Man.
No, but let me tell you something. It always bothered me because that first guy, he was awful excited about thinking he saw a bird. You know? Look, up in the sky! You know,
it's a bird!
Really, dude? Yeah, it's a bird, okay. But you ain't never seen a bird. Anyway. So, yeah, moving right along. So, look, I had wanted to, and I guess we may have to pick this up because I know there isn't a ton of time left, but I had wanted to talk a little bit about technology and the way that technology appears in comics and in these movies and television series that feature superheroes and, the science fiction-y stuff. Because, you know, certainly the technology that appeared in comics has affected the real life and influenced real life and vice versa. And I keep thinking about Iron Man, that first Iron Man movie where there was a scene where Stark is getting into the armor and our Rhodey at the time is looking at this and he's like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. and just simply the fact that Iron Man's been one of my favorite characters for a long time, but technology finally caught up with this character in that ordinary people, can actually envision that somebody could create a suit that allows them to do all this stuff.
I was waiting for you to be like, ordinary people can shoot beams out of their hands and feet.
I'm waiting,
you know?
Yeah, well, I'm looking for the flying cars. But yeah, but, you know,
same here.
Yeah, but so that's noteworthy. You know,
it's really interesting you bring that up. I just read a comic that when I was at San Diego Comic-Con, I did an interview with the guys. It's written in main part by Jim Kruger, mm-hmm. who, you know, is a longtime comics writer. And it's called Neon Theory. Mm-hmm. I heard of this one. You know, they send you tons of press releases. And I was like, that sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a new comic. It's from a company that's like its own little startup company. But the premise of it, it was based on Steve Aoki, the DJ and producer, who apparently wants to be cryogenically frozen when he dies, because he thinks people will really come back or be brought back. But basically, the story is a war on technology. And so in that story, it's people who have gone, quote unquote, analog versus people who have technology implanted into their bodies. Mm. And I don't know how I come down on, you know, which side is right in that comic, because you can kind of see both ways the way they're writing it. But I do joke about and also have fear about the day when they implant a chip into my arm to ID me, you know, and it turns all Minority Report on us and everything. So I think it is really interesting that this comic just came out recently, because it is a comic about the nano, like the smaller integrated technology that people are trying to develop to help with like health problems and stuff like that, and the ways that it can either be helpful or go awry, or people won't like it or stuff. So yeah, I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. Who knows? Maybe that comic and others like it will result in us having things implanted into us, and I will go live in a cave. But I do think you're right about that. It's like people envision it, and then it's like I got to hear an astronaut give a speech once, and he was at the Nebula Awards for sci-fi and fantasy writing, and he was like, "We love sci-fi and fantasy writers because you imagine it, and then we try to make it happen." Mm-hmm. And that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, and all the people who work in actual science today will tell you that they were inspired by various works of fiction that they enjoyed as young people, or, you know, that steered them to a career in the sciences, you know, which I've always thought was noteworthy.
I mean, that's like the perfect example, and Yuli, you know this, is Star Trek and the communicators, which eventually became, you know, our smartphones. So, I mean, I mean, like I said, like, you know, with Iron Man, like, being the current example of something where you kind of envision it in a futuristic sense of something where you can have that, you know, armored, you know, battle suits in a sense, and things of that nature.
Yeah, but exoskeletons.
Exoskeletons. Mm-hmm. And then leading into, let's say, Iron Man 2, where you have, you know, droids, you know, being your, you know, your military instead of actual human beings.
Then look at Spider-Man Far From Home. With the crazy, well, I don't want to spoil. It's still kind of out there. So, but there's a lot of development of that technology that you know, from beginning to that point.
Right. But the unfortunate thing, though, is with that being said, it's all military.
Oh yeah. The original RoboCop.
Yeah. You know? RoboCop. Even then. Yeah. Where I feel like.
But somebody's got to pay for it.
Right, true. Mm. And then, sadly, it will probably be the government, but or us, the taxpayers. But my viewpoint is, I've always visioned the fact of the future being, you know, something more that benefits everyone. One, i.e., of course, the flying car. And, you know, and something to where we can actually, again, go to from here to the moon without using a spaceship anymore, and things of that sense.
I would love technology that means I no longer have to joke about whether I need to clone myself. I would like the technology that, like, does all the tasks I don't want to do, like picks up my dry cleaning. Like, I love my little robot vacuum cleaner that runs around on the floor.
You've got one of those?
Oh, I do now. And I love it. Everyone should have one. They're great. There was a deal and I was like, sold. And it's great, you know? And I still, you know, you still vacuum, but in between that, it cleans up and
Roomba.
Well,
I can't say that.
Mine's a shark. But, okay. By the way, I have to correct myself. I think I misspoke the name of that comic I was talking about. It's called Neon Future by Impact Theory. That's the company. Okay. I think I said Neon Theory by accident, but it's Neon Future. But yeah, I love the technology that can actually make my life easier and allow me to be, as someone who's got a full-time job plus a writing career and everything, I would love to have the things that mean my outside time is just writing a lot of the time, you know? So I love things that are even like technology, quote-unquote, like Peapod, you know?
Right.
It'll deliver your groceries for you. So I want that stuff. As well, you know, the military applications are interesting and stuff, but I want the things that are going to help your health, and I want the things that are going to help your efficiency. And so if anybody wants to write comics about everything you can think of with that, maybe people will start creating more of it. Maybe I'll start writing that comic. Right. We'll see.
Well,
you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM. We are Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Shireen Nicole. Shireen, you still there?
Yep.
Okay. Brian Lyles and Emily S. Witten. And we're talking about technology and the way that it appears in fiction, most notably comic books, television, movies, and how it influences and informs reality, and how reality influences and informs technology. Brian, you were getting ready to say something.
The perfect examples of a lot of futuristic possibilities, in my sense, has always been anime, and the things that they envision of how the future will be. I mean, and through the years, I mean, you know, from watching a 70s anime and seeing how they see 20 years from now will be, and you know, and pretty much that type of blockage, you know, through each decade. Most recently, I finished Psycho Pass. It's a futuristic, give it a good 100 years, of where pretty much in this perfect, day and age where everyone's freaking out, you know, a lot of over-emotional people and things like that. So pretty much the world needed to have a stabilization. So they pretty much police the medical, you know, area, and they created these, you know, weapons where they sadly, you know, kill off a person that can go psycho. So, you know, based off of their condition, and things of that nature. But throughout the series, you can see how technology was well in advance and things of that nature. Another show,
Where do you see that one?
I saw it on Hulu. I binged it on Hulu. Did two seasons.
Psychopaths.
Cool. Another show, a classic show, Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
I mean, mind you, it's surprisingly it's like 50 years into the future, and things have progressed there. You know, we have our flying ships, and you know, we're traveling through Saturn and going through warp tunnels and things of that nature. Those are type of things I kind of want to see, even though they still had implement some. You know, normal, I wouldn't say normal, but just stuff that you're familiar with. But at least you saw the progression. And I think that's what technology is. It's a progression of things that, again, helped us, built us, made us either better or somewhat worse for some, depends on who you are. And
I mean, I do want flying cars, just because.
Yeah. We want Mr. Fantastic.
Also that knife in Hitchhiker's Guide that toasts the bread as it cuts it. Mm. Wow, I want that so much.
I tell you what, though, the flying cars just aren't practical. And my wife was talking about the flying cars. And the problem is that you got people who cars would be falling out of the sky on the people's houses. True. I mean, that's just, you know, you can't necessarily pull over to get a flat.
That's what you need. You know, one, we, you know, I don't know what.
Oh, sustainable anti-grav technology. Where the thing stops and it's still hovering in the sky.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah. Whatever. Besides putting in a Hemi.
Dare to dream bigger, Yuli. Dare to dream bigger.
So, I mean, the thing is like we. A lot of people got a huge amount of imagination, and not just within the writing of this stuff, but there, you know, it somehow manifested into something real, and that's why I feel like I believe that there's true possibility of a lot of things, you know, for this, you know, for us and on this planet to, again, I would like to see us go to Mars. And in an instant, you know, I do believe in, you know, warp travel and things of that nature. I believe we can go to that other Earth that's like about 37 trillion miles away.
Well, and the beautiful thing about sci-fi and fantasy, whether it's in comics or other things, but specifically sci-fi, I guess, is you can dream anything.
Right.
So, for instance, if I want that technology that makes the shield helicarrier cloaked on my clothes, maybe someday we'll have it. And I can walk down the street and go up behind you and tap you on the shoulder and be like, surprise! And you'll be like, what? I'll be like, guess what? I just got this at the new technology clothes store.
That would be probably the ultimate application of that technology. But, you know,
love thinking of weird stuff like that. But that's what we need, is we need people thinking of weird stuff like that. Yeah, so, you know. Thanks, you.
Well, and no, but see, I recall that the technology was particularly important to you as you were researching the Underfoot. And you made a deliberate effort to make sure that everything that appears in the graphic novel is something that not just conceivable, but possibly actual. But we've been spending a lot of time talking about the technical. The other element that I want to mention is the genetic element of technology, because, you know, what you find in television and movies and comics doesn't always involve advances that are purely technical, you know.
Is this where we clone me? I'm real excited.
This could be the part where we clone you. Maybe we just clone a part of you, because in case you need a new heart
or this kind of thing, for no reason at all.
You know, so we clone a part of you so that you've got spare parts. Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, I think wasn't that. Oh, what was that thing? It was Scarlett Johansson, because she's in everything, and The Island. Who was the dude who played Obi-Wan?
Ewan McGregor?
Yes.
How do I pronounce his first name?
Exactly, yeah. Because they were all clones, and in case you needed spare parts for the real people.
Orphan Black was, you know, that's a really interesting show about that kind of thing. And also, even in fantasy, the Terry Pratchett books, he has the Igors, and they know how to save someone's limb and graft it onto somebody else, and it's medicine that they're practicing, but it's considered to be like their special, like, you know, it's not, I don't know if they call it magic in the book, but it's like, but Igor, one of the Igors at one point, he has a dog named Scrapth, because all of the Igors lisp, and Scraps has
like two hearts and like an extra tail and like all this weird stuff going on. It's like just because he wants to wag both tails, you know.
That's pretty wild,
right?
But I think with, you know, that type of technology, you know, genetics and things of that nature, again, there's possibilities, and that's the main thing.
And there's moral questions that go with
true.
With
and
when, that as well.
With cloning, I mean, mind you, the cloning has been around for now 20 years, you know, thanks to the, you know, the little lamb that we created.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, I mean, those type of things, again, without someone thinking about it in a or writing about it in a book or comic book, you know, we wouldn't have these type of thought process to actually implement them and put it out in the world and see what happens. Mind you, there's some moral compass that will go back and forth on it.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's kind of like, this will help society in the end.
Yeah. Or even with the technology.
We hope. I mean, I'm reminded of it because there's also, in terms of that, in integrating stuff, whether it's genetic or technical, into humans. And one of the things I thought was a really great story, particularly the first season, because they did a couple of TV movies, but $6 Million Man with Lee Majors, because he was tortured over the fact that he was bionic and he had these, you know, replacement parts, and you know, there were times when, oh, I'm a machine, and all
that. And the bionic
that.
Woman as well. Yeah. And, yeah. and then on the other side of the spectrum, Inspector Gadget. he wasn't real bothered by it.
Well, you know, I thought the movie, they did a little bit better with that.
Oh, I didn't see the movie.
Yeah, with Matthew Broderick. Yeah, you know,
so they maybe I'll go watch that.
Yeah, so they did some more backstory. Anyway, look, we are just about out of time. I want to thank all of my guests, and you too, for tuning in. Fantastic Forum also happens to be a television show. If you are in the Arlington, Virginia area, you can check it out on Arlington Independent Media, Comcast Channel 69, Verizon Fios Channel 38, and it's on at 8 p.m. on Saturday nights and Sunday nights. Also, you can check out the website at fantasticforum.tv. We've got different sections of the television show broken out for your convenience. And the TV show re-airs each and every Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. right here on WERA. And it's available as a podcast through the Great Geek Refuge. So look, you can check out all of our wonderful guests. We've only got 20 seconds left. I would have, you know, hit everybody for these social media plugs. But hey, trust me, my guests are great. You can find them connected through Fantastic Forum. So hey, be sure to come back. Same bat time, same bat station next week.
Bye.